Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
One of my supporters is a woman in Australia, and she's a young woman from Europe. She's married to an Australian man, and they've had a bunch of children already. And she asked me about whether I know of any women's organizations. How can women network with each other? And then she was saying that the Baltic country that she comes from, that there they have annual get-togethers where families get together and people get together and they do stuff. But in Australia, this doesn't happen. So that is what caused me to speak to Sally in America, and Sally then went and invited these two other ladies so that we could have a chat about things that they are all doing. And that was really the purpose of this exercise. However, as you will see, there are problems with organizations in the USA. And so organizations that used to exist don't exist anymore. As a result, we also went off script and we started talking about other things. And then the chat became quite long. But one of the things that came up from Sally was the concept of Lebensborn. Now, Sally is an ardent National Socialist in America, and she's got her own children, and she also dug into this issue of Lebensborn. Basically, Lebensborn translates into the fount of life, and it was a secretive German program that they started in 1935, started by Heinrich Himmler, with the goal of increasing the birth rate of racially pure Aryan children. So this was actually so that guys who were in the SS could father more children. Now, there are some of these concepts that may be an irritant to some Christians, but the truth of the matter is that having children is not a crime. It is something that I raise in our discussion. Because another guy that I've spoken to about this, who is extremely committed to the issue of whites having more children, is a man here in South Africa, a Boer, and his name is Koen Vermaak. And Koen Vermaak is the leader of the Boerestaatpartij, the Boer State Party. Now, Koen, like myself, is an atheist. He used to be a Christian. He used to be in the AWB with Eugene Tablanche and all that. But there are a couple of those guys, a couple of those older guys, who became atheists. And Koen looks at the world and at our history without having the blinkers of Christianity. And Koen has written several books about the need for children, especially here in South Africa, and about all the bad things that were done in South Africa, contraception, etc. And so that's why we got a small population, is because whites in Africa did not go and do what the Germans did. If we had done what the Germans did, and we've had decades in which to do it, we could have been in a way better position than we are today. But capitalism and all kinds of stupid thinking and business thinking, that's what gets you into the situation that we're in here in South Africa now. But Koen said something very interesting to me. Koen said to me that in all of his reading of European history, that he has never found an instance in pre-Christian times where a woman was punished for having a child, whether it is out of wedlock or in whatever way. That there was no time where a woman was punished for being single and becoming pregnant or whatever. Whereas Christians will shun such a person, and Christians talk about a child being a bastard and all that kind of thing, and that only children born in wedlock are the right children, etc. So Koen and I are in total agreement that for a woman to get pregnant and to have a child is not a crime, okay? The whole issue of who the father is and whether she was married or not married and this and that and other things, those are other discussions. Now, Himmler and the SS had this Lebensborn program, and the goal of that was to allow SS men to have more children. So even if an SS man was married, he could go and father a child with another woman. Now, mostly, the vast majority of the time, these men were fathering children with single women. And those single women kept their children and raised their children themselves. However, the Lebensborn program was to select racially high quality men and women. So when there was a woman who was racially suitable, then in some cases, even if she's married, they might actually let her be the mother of a child by an SS man. There were all kinds of rules, and I don't want to go into that kind of thing. The main thing was that most of the time you had an SS man, he had a wife, and then he was encouraged to father children, mostly with women who were single, but who were racially high quality. So there is a little bit of blurring at certain points, but officially the Nazis were for the, quotes, traditional family, but behind the scenes, they actually encouraged men to have more children, especially SS men. And the state looked after those kids. And a woman could even have a child, and if she doesn't want to raise the child, then the child will be handled by the state. The bottom line is that the Germans made it a critical priority to have more children and to do it in a way that works. So in that regard, that is what Lebensborn is about. And the values that the Germans had were such that a woman who was racially pure was looked up to, and it wasn't a stigma like it would have been in Christianity. Now, in the show, we didn't discuss this in detail, but Sally knows about it, and Sally was very, very interested in this, and she did her own research. So what I wanted to do, just to start the show, is a little bit of music. But in this music, you're going to see a very famous group. You're going to see ABBA. And I'm going to tell you that one of the members of ABBA is a Lebensborn child. So here's a lovely ABBA song, and see if you can guess which one is the Lebensborn child.
Yeah.
So how cool was that ABBA performance from 1976? And it was done for royalty. I'm not sure exactly which royalty they were performing for, but it's very nice and classy, hey? It's some pop music, but with a bit of a nice, classy touch. Nice European touch, hey? So could you figure out who the Lebensborn child was? I would have guessed that most people would have imagined it to be the blonde lady. But if you'll look on the screen in front of you, the actual woman who was the Lebensborn child is the one you see on the screen in front of you, Annifred. Annifred was actually born on 15 November 1945. And of course, as you can see on that stupid news headline that I've got there, it starts with the normal Jewish liberal garbage. Oh, the torment of the ABBA star with a Nazi father. And all that screeching and howling and rubbish. I'm not going to go into her life or any of her issues, but it's the brunette lady in ABBA, Annifred. She is a Lebensborn child. So that means that her father and mother were racially pure. And if you look in that music video carefully, you'll see that you can spot it a bit in her face there. So, of course, all the old ragtag rubbish, they will moan and bitch and groan about this. But the reality is that if you function according to nature, which is what Hitler was doing, if you function according to the laws of nature, then all kinds of things are possible. Now, the actual arrangements in our society as to the rules around these things, that's a whole other discussion. But if you look into the Lebensborn program, you'll see that the Germans were trying to figure things out. And I think they had some pretty cool rules. I think that they did some really great stuff. And if we just tap into nature, if we as a race tap into nature in all ways, according to the laws of nature, we're going to be insanely awesome. We're going to be awesome and nobody is going to be able to stop us. As it is, white people are a very rule-driven, controlled people. We don't just do things. We think up our rules and our laws and the way in which we want to do things, and we think ahead, and then we come up with a concept. I am absolutely certain that we can easily come up with answers to all sorts of problems so that at the end of the day, it benefits society, but also that men and women are happy and fulfilled, and that as a team, we become stronger and stronger. As always, we can invent and create, and it's not going to take us long to figure out ways of dealing with all sorts of things. And I will repeat that nature is on our side. I will return to that. Nature is on our side in so many ways. And the thing that's killing us, the thing that's been killing us now for centuries, is that we are not functioning in line with nature. That is where huge amounts of our problems come from. So anyway, here's the show, and the show is just over 2 hours. And when the show ended, when I ended the show, we sort of relaxed and then we had more chit-chats. And it carried on for a bit longer. And actually, the chit-chats were fun. So I've actually left it all in. And then, at the time that we did the show, I actually had some points I wanted to make at the end. And we'd talked so much and gone off in different directions that I didn't put my ending in. So I'm inserting my ending now, and you'll see how I wanted to end the show. So here's the show. Hi there, ladies. I hope that you're well today. And today's chat is really to do with women's groups and family stuff and getting people in touch with each other. That's what it's really about. because I have got a good supporter in Australia, a lady who's from Europe, and she's happily married and got a bunch of children, and she was trying to find ways of making contact with other women, other groups, just trying to find out, where do you find other women's groups? How can you make contact with people, etc.? So this is an area where I have no experience whatsoever. And so that's why I've got you ladies here, because I'm sure that you can guide me and others on how to navigate forward and what you know about groups and what's going on out there, etc. And also, if there are people who would like to contact you and find out more about what you're doing, and if you can also recommend other people that we can point people to. The main thing is networking and so forth. This lady also was saying to me that in the European country that she comes from, she originally comes from one of those small Baltic nations, and she said that they would have all kinds of annual get-togethers and things like that, and that kind of stuff was missing in Australia, and I assume it's missing elsewhere. And I know that mothers and women are the ones who organize all these sorts of things, so I'm sure you guys can give me some feedback and input.
Okay. Excuse me. Thank you, Jan. It's nice to be with you today, and Caitlin and Nikki also. Thank you guys for being here. Yeah, I think that this is a really important topic, and I'm glad that we're going to be discussing, you know, each of our perspectives on it. I know that, especially in a big country like Australia, or for me, the U.S., it can be kind of hard to find a community, even locally. It just seems like there's a lot of, there's just, especially since all of the craziness of COVID, I really feel like a lot of groups that were in place have gone extinct. They stopped meeting for that. And it seems like a lot of these groups have had a hard time getting their momentum back and getting people to come out in real life. I know that I was discussing with the other ladies that I used to be a part of the La Leche League organization, which is it's an international organization that was started by mothers in the Chicago area in the 50s to help with other women who wanted to breastfeed, because at that time there was just a big push to get babies to be on formula. So there just wasn't a lot of support for natural child rearing kind of things. There's just a big focus on hospital births and you know, all of the space age baby making or something. So these ladies started La Leche League, and it just grew and grew and grew. And it was a lot of, you know, that within the organization, they would like to pride themselves saying that they were really one of the first truly grassroots organizations. And it was, you know, by mothers, for mothers. It was a place for, just for moms and babies to meet. Obviously you get help each other. You know, there was no such thing as like now they have lactation consultants and these professional titles for this kind of stuff. But back then it was just other mothers helping each other and kind of learning along with each other. And over the years they amassed a lot of literature, and a lot of it has this really nice, warm, authentic, you know, grassroots quality to it. But now there's it seems that even this organization, which has been around, you know, 50, 60 years, whatever it is, I think that even that is really starting to come unraveled. There was, of course, your what's unfortunately become the commonplace sort of scandalous thing where a transgender, basically a woman pretending to be a man, but wanted to have a baby and wanted to breastfeed, have the cake, eat it too, be a man, be a woman. I don't know what. This person started, you know, wanting to attend LHLE meetings. And so there was grappling with all of that kind of bizarre, poisonous liberal stuff. And that, of course, created a lot of division. And eventually, so of course, over the years, the original mothers were stayed involved. But, you know, they've passed away or retired. But there was one original mother that had still remained active on the board. Like I say, it's an international organization. So it is all in many, many countries around the world, not just America. But she ended up very recently openly sort of denouncing, and I think this is the only mother that has done this, of the original mothers, who's of course like a probably great grandmother at this point. And she basically, you know, denounced the thing and said, you know, I'm done. I don't want to be a part of this anymore because of, all of the crazy, you know, transgender stuff, and, that they were, you know, basically taking what she had built and destroying, you know, she was watching it fall apart before her eyes. And so that was a big scandal within the organization, and I had not really been involved with it that much actively. Recently, the original group that I was a part of was lovely. There was mothers that were pretty much, you know, would have been my mother's age. They were the ones who kind of encouraged me to join and become a leader, and they were just like the most wonderful, lovely mentors. But that group, again, had to sort of stop meeting for the COVID stuff, and then they never got back going again. And it's just a really, so I say all this, just long story long, to say that there are groups out there, but they're, you know, they're becoming rarer and rarer. And something like this, that was such a sort of storied organization that has been around for so long, even had such a hard time weathering that storm. And so I do think that we need to start reestablishing, especially in the white right, for our people to have these same kinds of places where we can go and just, you know, help each other. And LHLE had, and I think this is lovely, like, you know, they had cookbooks and they had all kinds of, you know, storybooks, and not just specifically about breastfeeding per se, but, you know, just the whole experience of mothering, and, you know, mothering as a verb, you know, that's a whole thing. And it's kind of a lost, it's becoming a lost art or something. Which is kind of bizarre, right? Like you become a mother and it just kind of happens, but there's ways to go about it that really just where you can appreciate it and, you know, feel connected to the whole process, and maybe just help yourself integrate with it, because it can be a huge shock changing over from being just the yourself to now being someone that is bringing new life into the world and nurturing it, and it can be overwhelming. So we need each other, and so I will pass it over to these other ladies. They have a lovely project going on that I think, you know, I hope to see such a thing grow around the country, but I'll let them explain about what they're up to. But that was just a little vignette. I thought kind of, hopefully gives you a little bit of a scope of like, this is what we want. We want these kinds of authentic grassroots mothers helping mothers, women helping each other. And it doesn't have to, you know, you don't have to be a mom yet to appreciate you know, all of the things, homemaking and cooking and the things that, you know, the things that make being a woman a very special, unique role that is, I'm just really happy that it's getting some focus. And so I will turn it over to these other ladies. Thanks.
I will just interrupt quickly. That was excellent what you said there. I really enjoyed what you were saying there. And stories and insights are most welcome.
So let me leave, and I'm looking forward to hearing what the other two ladies have to say.
Hello. Yeah, thank you for having us on this chat. So Nikki and I are living in the first intentional community that has been built with return to the land. And let's see, I think right now we have four women living here full time. They're, families, single guys, and there are a few other families that are here like half the year or kind of in and out, but yeah, this was started, I guess it's been about a year and a half, 2 years ago. So Oshilogos first put out a video on YouTube that was called A Call to Return to the Land, basically about how, everyone can see in mainstream society everything is going downhill and no one has like our people's interests at heart. So if we want to be, becoming healthier mentally and physically, we kind of need to take the reins and take it into our own hands. And then let's see. And then he got in contact with Arvol. It's Arvoll, and he is like, mostly in charge of putting this land buy together and putting the group together, along with many others. We have a There's a PMA, so private member association, that people would need to join first. And we also have an LLC. I believe that stands for a limited liability corporation. So we use the combination of those two to, buy land and sell the shares of the LLC to people who want to have land here. And that's a way that we have to do it because of the Fair Housing Act.
To avoid discrimination bylaws, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Peter Seary was, I guess, as Erval has termed it, the mastermind behind this legal framework for setting it up to avoid these discrimination, lawsuits that could occur as a result. And there is so like with the PMA, for example, the Private Membership Association. You would There's a small vetting process, and some other laws that would help the board members of the PMA and LLC come to a conclusion on whether or not you are someone that's congruent with our shared worldview and whether we actually have shared ancestry.
But another great thing is that we do have
If I may interrupt, that is very interesting what you are saying there. That sounds almost like that little town of Orania here in South Africa. They've also got like a strange structure that allows them to have this town, but the town only has white people in it. And they also have a strange kind of a structure which sounds very similar to this. So I do understand where this is coming from, and it's very clever.
That Jan, that's an interesting point too. Yeah, I we had a big online conference recently amongst many prominent figures in this movement. It was about 8 hours long. It I think cost $30 to attend to ensure a ticket to see the online listen to the online conference. And that was actually brought up that organically, Orania and RTTL and maybe some other organizations of which we're not aware have kind of in their own way have come up with the same sort of idea about how we can do this in a legal way.
And some of our board members visited Orania a few months ago. So yeah, we've definitely been in contact with them and are learning a lot from them. They're kind of like paving the way, I guess you could say.
That's excellent news. That's really good news. Because basically, from my understanding, is you're basically creating a business. And so it becomes a business with shareholders, etc. And then that gets you away from all the legal nonsense. That gets you away from all the other legal nonsense that they can come up with. So it's quite a heavy thing, but it's very interesting the way that you've described it. Anyway, continue.
I was just saying that we do have a lot of PMA members from different countries around the world. So you don't necessarily need to like be ready to move out here in order to just join and get involved. We have a very big Telegram chat with all of our PMA members so that everyone can kind of communicate with each other on a lot of different topics.
We also have an open non-PMA members chat, which is kind of like a holding cell for all of our friends who are a little bit on the fence. And, you know,
I was laughing when you said a holding cell.
But, you know, Caitlin makes a really good point in that you don't need to. There's many people that have communicated a similar position in terms of where they are in their life right now. Some people have rooted family dynamics where they are. Some people have a farm. Some people are, you know, maybe in their 40s, 50s, 60s. They're done having babies. They have a lot going on where they are, but they still want to help out. They still maybe even want to secure land in a sort of, you know, garbage hits the fan scenario. And that's okay. There's, as Caitlin mentioned, there's many PMA members who plan on keeping what they have going where they are, but have joined and bought into the LLC, bought their shares, and, you know, have a lot here, maybe more than one lot, and they plan on coming out to visit for events, coming out to help, you know, work their land and maybe get some crops going or whatever. And, you know, some people have the intention of maybe even building something so that they can maybe even create a sort of rent to own scenario for other younger white people who maybe are not in the same comfortable position that they are, their elders are at yet.
That is
and a women's group in relation to what the topic is about. I was just looking. There are about 30 of us in the group right now. So it's a good number where I feel like we are all very good friends and can rely on each other. But there are also enough of us to get a lot of different perspectives. So
yes, there's women in the women's group at all different stages, you know, maiden, mother. I would even argue maybe the crone archetype. There's people who are done having babies. There's people that haven't had any yet, like myself. I have to say that, you know, even though I haven't met maybe, I don't know, half of the women in the women's group yet, I do definitely feel, a bond forming the more we interact, because it's regular communication, and that's better than none. And I think it's very easy for people to become pessimistic in an age of sort of like superficial communication online. But when you actually have that shared worldview, when you have shared values, when you all know that, you know, this is the real deal and maybe it's not as bad as it could get yet, it does kind of give you the sense of really wanting to be there for these people, wanting to get to know them, and wanting to foster and build those bonds.
May I jump in for 1 second? Just what you said there, Caitlin, really kind of struck. I mean, Nikki, it really kind of struck a chord for me, because recently I had kind of this all sort of happened at once or around the same time. I had found out about the Return to the Land project. And right around that same time, my husband and I were both doxxed. And like, he was put on suspension from his job. And it was a very uncertain time for us. But it was like, it was almost just very providential that we had just found out very recently or simultaneously about what y'all are doing. And I just felt like, okay, well, here's something that is going to provide a potential you know, security. I mean, here's a whole community of people that where we, you know, if we end up having to, you know, we were very concerned we might end up losing the house if he lost his job, and all of that stuff. So just knowing that RTTL existed was like, yeah, it was like calming, you know. It was just like so nice to know that that was going on and that that was something that, that we could join up with. So, you know, I have joined the PMA and, yeah, we're starting, a second. So right now there's one community and, of course, I don't know all the details, but, that's been established and most of the shares are spoken for it, but a second land buy is in the process. So, nearby the first one, we're looking to establish a second one and the plan eventually, as I understand it, is hopefully that this model can spread to other, parts of the country. But like I said, it was just what you said about knowing that that community was available and just the sense of, just security and feeling like you're a part of something that was hugely, it wasn't just like, oh, isn't this nice? It was, I felt like, oh, wow, this is like a blessing to have this possibility that if we have to leave where we are now, that we've got somewhere to go that, that's safe. And, you know, so anyway, I was just, I'm just really grateful for everybody that's put in work on this already. And, hopefully we can spread the word a little bit about it, because I think that there's many, many people that are looking for something like this, where you feel that there's a place for you. You know, you're out here, like we have a good bit of property where we are. We've got, you know, we're putting down a bit of roots here, but it can all be taken away, you know, in a minute, really. I mean, we were close. There was people coming to around our house, and there was a sense of my home being invaded and people, you know, lurking around what I thought was my safe zone was just really horrible. It was a horrible feeling. And so, you know, knowing about RTTL is just like a huge comfort. So, yeah.
Wow. Just listening to all of you, I'm going to jump in. And I just want to make a bunch of comments about a whole bunch of the things that were said. Going back to you, Sally, the moment that you mentioned breastfeeding, I want to tell you a story that my mother told me. My mother used to say such interesting things. I looked after my mom until she passed away at the age of 87. And at various times, my mom would tell me all sorts of things from the past, and sometimes we'd even drive off to various places like the original church where she was married, etc. But one thing that my mother said to me one day that really stuck out for me, which was quite a strange thing, was she said to me that she was of the opinion that once women stopped doing breastfeeding, that breast cancer started at that time. And I'll be curious to hear if any of you have heard of that. My mother used to believe that breastfeeding was that breastfeeding was like healthy, and that the moment women went away from that in our part of the world, that's when breast cancer came out and became an issue. And the various things you were mentioning, Sally, just about women helping women and teaching other women things, etc., and that there are now all these fancy titles like lactation consultants and everything. This reminds me of what I've seen everywhere. I've seen this now in every conceivable business. I first saw it in computers when I was in the computer industry. When I got into computers decades ago, we didn't have many titles, and we mostly, guys like me who were writing software, we just called ourselves computer programmers. And nowadays, if you get into computers, there are about 20 different titles, different job titles. And when I look back on these things, then I can see that, you know, I used to do about 5 or 6 of all those different things that they now have specific jobs for. I personally think that I'm not impressed by the process, and I don't know how this came about. I'm not sure who invented it or where it was driven from, but I view it with contempt. I don't take it seriously. So when I hear something like you were laughing at lactation consultants and all that, all of that sounds like a bunch of baloney to me. It sounds like the thing that let's call it mommy used to do. Mom did about 10 or 15 different jobs that now have got all kinds of fake experts, and chances are they don't even know what they're doing. And in the case of computers and other areas, they invented all these different job titles and things, and all kinds of low IQ human garbage got into the businesses, and it just made everything more chaotic. It didn't improve anything.
Oh, well, just on that, it's so funny you say that, because I agree completely. It's just this sort of barrier to entry kind of licensing, you know, pay your fee so you can have your initials at the back of your title, of your name, you know, on your business card or what have you. But it's funny because the ladies that were my mentors in the original group that I was in, like I said, they were in it since their children were born, and that was, you know, 30 years prior. So they were in it for a long time. And so they had a lot of funny stories about how basically La Leche League kind of was the thing. And that when they decided, okay, we're going to create these official titles, they basically consulted with the La Leche League leaders, and, so they created, you know, the IBCLC, whatever that stands for. And it was based basically off of just what these women had come up with, you know, hanging out in their sweet little groups together, and the expertise that they had compiled just from helping each other normal, you know, the way that you would. But the crazy thing that one of the crazy things that they would tell me, because most of them were lactation consultants kind of by default, because they just sort of, they already met the qualifications just from being involved in the group for so long. But they were saying that a lactation consultant is one of the only kind of professional titles in this sort of medical world where you have to, I don't know if it's yearly, but you have to, in order to recertify, you can't just do like continuing education or something like what you would typically see with something like that. You actually have to retake the test every so often. And so these women that have been doing, helping each, you know, other women for decades would be, I remember when each of their tests would come up and they'd be stressing about, oh, you know, I have to study for this and I have to make sure I go over all of my materials, and oh, I'm not sure I'm going to pass. And I would just think, like, my goodness, if you can't pass, no one can, you know, you are the basis of the entire thing, you know, what you all have been doing for decades. So yeah, it is, I agree on it. It's just totally, all of that kind of stuff is ultimately, I think it just amounts to a barrier to entry and a way to extract, you know, money and have boards of directors and all this make work kind of superfluous stuff. But yeah, I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole thing is that there's lots and lots of things that whites used to do that nobody ever got a formal education for. And the further you go back in history, the more you find that. And we have a high IQ. We can solve problems and we can make a lot of progress very quickly. So it's amazing when I see these things. Well, let me jump in with a little story for you. That when they were splitting up all these teams and things and changing the way departments worked, there was one computer department that was specifically for a contact center, for a bank's contact center. So there were like 1,000 people, mostly blacks, who are answering telephones, etc. But the actual computer programming was done by a small group of people. I can't remember if it was something like 15 whites, 15 or 20 white people who did all the computer programming for all the systems that related to this contact center. Anyway, one of those people was a lady that I later worked with, and she told me that she and one other person used to handle a certain system, and it was just the two of them, and they did everything that was needed for that system. However, when the quotes new methods came in, the next thing you knew was that those two white women were replaced by about 20 people. 20. So 20 people were now doing the same job that just the two of them had been doing. And I've seen these things so many times. And believe it or not, now you've got a manager and a this and a that, and everybody's got a title and a qualification, and they take longer to do everything. There's a whole lot more chaos. The end result is insanely expensive. The whole thing's just rubbish. Whereas if you just left whites alone to use their own thinking and do their own stuff, then everything would work fine. In my early days in computers, when I got into computer systems the very first time, I worked in Pretoria and I only worked with other whites. And we used to have tiny teams. We used to have tiny, tiny teams of people. And we used to work like in one case, we worked on the second biggest computer system in the company. And there were just three of us. And then when it comes to like taking your programs and putting your programs live, then the way we'd work is, you know, we'd say, okay, who's going to be on standby this weekend? Oh, okay, Jan, it's your turn to do standby this weekend. And then another guy will say, listen, Jan, I made this and this and this change. In case there's a problem, just be aware that I changed this. And I'd say, no problem and no sweat, and off we go. And then, you know, fast forward 30 years later to these other systems and other methods, and then you have entire departments, an entire department doing stuff that we used to just chat to each other. You know, we used to just sit in the same office and just say, hey, Fred, you know, this and this and this, just remember that. Okay, no problem. Monday morning comes, everything's fine. Or somebody was called out and said, oh, I was called out and I had to work through the night and fix it, but all is well. And, you know, 30 years later, the same task, you need managers, you need permissions, you need people signing forms. It's like a whole flipping process that wastes so much time. And, you know, whereas we used to do the same stuff, but with no hassle. And I'm sure that when it comes to things like mothering, et cetera, that the same junk is happening there. And if women just work together the way that whites used to work together, people will quickly cotton on to all sorts of things. The other point that you mentioned was transgenders coming in and wanting to do breastfeeding, and now there's all kinds of new problems, and that is what destroyed that group. That is very sad for me, but that is an unfortunate consequence of liberals and Jews at work and all the hideous rubbish that comes out of it. They destroy society with this kind of stuff. And that's why you have to ultimately function as a closed group. You have to ultimately function as a closed group and keep all the human trash out. Because if you let the human garbage in, you're going to have all kinds of problems. So I'm very sad to hear the story about how that organization was destroyed because of transgender nonsense. And The other stuff you mentioned, you were saying women and cookbooks. I would imagine, And just listening to some of the things that you're saying about having a child and becoming a mother, and sometimes it's overwhelming and all that. You know, this is all part of nature. It's part of nature and biology. And women have dealt with this before and organized with this before. And I think that chances are, if normal women just gather together and you all share your expertise and teach each other and help each other, that that you can not only help each other in a significant way, but it was interesting to also listen to Caitlin and Nikki talking about bonding, about people starting to feel closer, that you are now part of something and you can feel that you can trust people, etc. And what I want to say about that return to the land thing is that you folks are going to have to be careful, and we will have to make sure, we'll have to make sure how we put out this information. But I want to warn you that if you've got an organization that is big and it's going to grow and it's this kind of thing, it's bringing white people together and you're going to start living happily together, doing your own thing, things are going to go from strength to strength, you're going to bond together. I want to warn you, Jews and liberals will be trying to tear that thing apart at the soonest. They will want to try to find ways of destroying what you are doing. Because if this kind of concept takes off in America, especially in America, but also elsewhere in the Western world, if this kind of concept takes off, this kind of concept is a direct threat to liberalism, multiculturalism, etc. So you folks will have to make sure that I like that holding cell idea, but you people are going to have to make sure that you have lots of tests and requirements in order to see to it that quality gets in there, and that you don't have troublemakers getting in there. Because I notice, even just with my activities on the white right, I must tell you, there's all kinds of trash. You get all kinds of trash, and even Jews coming in and starting to want to be in there. And these people are there to cause big trouble. And so if people have invested money and invested time and so forth, then if trouble is caused, it's going to be really upsetting to everybody. It's going to really put people under a lot of stress. So if I may make a suggestion, the suggestion is make sure that you check people, double check people, put lots of things in there to test people, because this thing is something that you've got to protect, and it would be wonderful for these kinds of things to work. And all that the Jews and liberals are trying to do is they know that if they leave us alone, that we'll be fine and we'll be happy and we'll get along and we'll get things done. But they are destroyers. They are jealous. They hate this. They know what it leads to, and they will aggressively try to stuff it up. So people will have to be careful in this regard. But I'm very happy to hear that. So I'm sorry to kind of pour cold water onto this in that sense, but I just want to warn you. I just want to warn you that when you do something and you are happy, you'll find that these bastards come in. I've seen it myself on my own websites in the past, in the distant past, when I first got onto the internet, and even in the more recent past, when I did things on my websites like allow people to have comments. And I put comments on my websites and people could write and everyone could write, and we're all having a ball and it's all fun and it's wonderful and we're enjoying each other's company. And then you'll find these slime bags coming and they are looking for ways to destroy what you are doing. They know that if we're left to our own devices, we'll be okay. And so they'll try and stuff it up in all kinds of ways. So that's an unfortunate thing. So Sally, if you've got anything you want to add, then we can do the next round.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate what you're saying there, Jan, because I'm sure Nikki and Caitlin probably have much more insight about what kinds of measures are being taken. I know that as part of the process when I was getting involved, there's interviews, phone interviews, and then before you can really, officially buy your plot, they want to make sure that they meet you in person and, all those kinds of things. But again, as things grow, it's easy for things to snowball and people to kind of start to slip under the radar. So, like I said, they probably have a little bit more insight there. But I did just want to, maybe I'm trying to shoehorn this a little bit, but I did just find it kind of funny that, and I don't know how much you've seen of this, Jan, but it's been all over the place with that that mother, Shiloh, that just got doxxed at the playground when she called she called that the boy. There was a boy that a black kid that got into her son's bag or something and was stealing, and called him a nigger. And then this weirdo person that happened to be there at the playground was then filmed her and was, doxing her and trying to, ruin her life, as they love to do. And so now, she started the Give, Send, Go funding site, and the outpouring of just like massive amounts of money to where she's now up. Last I saw, and this is a few hours ago, it was like her fundraiser was up to like over $600,000. They just kept moving it. Every time the goal would be met, she was moving it more and more. And I think that it's pretty fascinating and little phenomenon taking place at the moment. And so by the time this recording is out, who knows where this will have gone. But, I think a lot of that is really symbolic of a shift that's taking place. And this is, I guess, nice bit of white pill that our people are willing to kind of step up and get behind this mother, and it seems that she may, I don't know what her situation is, but it seems that she's sort of out here on her own, trying to just get some, originally was her whole idea was, if you guys could just help me out with some money so I can, I'm lost my job because of this doxing. And so it's just become this huge rallying point for our people to step up and support and say, look, we're tired of this. We're really starting to get over the white guilt thing. And so I think that's showing some promise. And so, like you said, the more that's seen by our enemies and those that would seek to do us harm, they're going to, redouble their efforts to try to shut things down. So, just seeing that it's pretty, pretty amazing. And I know I think some of the reaction to that is sort of a response to the money that was raised by the killer of that young man, the football player, the murderer was basically getting all this money, and the family was raising all this money and getting a house and getting a car, and all the coloreds and all the MUDs were getting behind this kid who had literally murdered someone. And so this woman says the wrong word in the wrong place, and then now all of these blacks and everything are up in arms about that. How can these whites come together behind this woman? And she said this word. Meanwhile, this nigger kid has like killed a young man in the prime of his life. But that's okay. You can get behind him all day. So anyway, just to say that, women's issues are you know, they're very unique, and sometimes there's a little bit of a, I don't know, almost like a strange taboo about, you know, if you support women, there's, you know, you're supporting a, it's feminist or something like that. And, you know, that's not really what it's about at all. It's just that, you know, we, as women, we need support. That's, you know, we're sort of there to support the families, but we need protection. You know, we're here to, I think that Nikki and Caitlin had said that someone in the women's group had said that, you know, women are the backbone of the, of society. And we are, you know, we're sort of in the background holding things together, but we need someone out front with the spear and the shield defending us so that we can have a happy home and a safe place and a soft place that, you know, that we can create the places in life that are secure and comfortable. But we need that protection. And so it was just nice to see a whole bunch of people get behind this and defend this woman when she needed it. So anyway, I'll leave that there and I'll let the other ladies talk because I feel like I'm, as we women are wont to do, we'd like to chat. And so I'm going to like step off and let the other ladies have a go.
You guys, both Jan and Sally, have both made a lot of really good points. I've been taking a few notes here so that I don't lose track of things that I might want to touch upon or circle back to. Maybe I'll just say that I agree wholeheartedly with the sort of fracturing and pseudo sort of like specializations and creation of quote jobs that were once just generational nuggets of wisdom. You know, things like midwifery and all of the potential red tape that could exist within that field. Not to say that midwifery isn't a beautiful profession and a really sometimes I would say growing necessity as an alternative to, you know, modern hospitals. I've heard many horror stories of people that, you know, for one reason or another, maybe they're not, you know, based or whatever, they chose to or had complications where they had to have their babies in hospitals. And I have met people firsthand that have just sort of nightmarish scenarios in terms of, you know, having child protective services called on them for, you know, wanting to leave earlier than the hospital, you know, was giving them permission to. There was a woman just the other day who I have more to say about, but in the women's group, who's a PMA member. That's another good point to bring up. Kind of security measures are in place. The women's group is a closed group as well. Mm-hmm. It used to be open, but Caitlin, as the kind of like founder of the women's group, decided wisely that it would be best to just leave the women's group only open to PMA members. So one of the moms in our group the other day was sharing, she has many children already, and she was sharing her experience with birthing, I think entirely outside of hospitals. She might have utilized birthing centers a couple of times, but she, you know, became very fascinated with and confident, I think, with her experiences and maybe her own family members. I think she said she assisted with a sister's birth. And she does not, you know, as far as I'm aware, she does not have a midwifery license, and was talking about some of her secondhand experiences with, you know, midwives because of the laws in place to maintain their license and do it in a legal fashion, having to drop their clients, their mothers, before they came to term because they, you know, exceeded what was supposed to be a normal term. And that's actually another good point, is that, you know, whites in general, statistically, I think we carry babies longer than a lot of other people, especially brown people. Brown people actually statistically have earlier or preemie babies. They're just physically, I think, a little bit more advantageous. But I guess on that point, I'd like to go back to something, Jan, that you brought up a little while back now about the potential correlation between the decrease of breastfeeding and breast cancer, and maybe even other, you know, reproductive issues. A good friend of mine who used to be a boss once told me that he studies holistic medicine. He had said to me that he firmly believes that a lot of the sort of like endocrine related and reproductive related disorders that you're seeing now an uptick in women and men, but specifically women, are actually due to the lack of procreation, the lack of reproduction. And the entire reason that we go through the menstrual cycle each month and it's not put on pause is because you don't have an egg that gets fertilized. And I think when women have a kind of a particular window, you know, we just have less time to work with. Not that that's a fear-mongering point, but we do have a limited amount of time in which we are not only fertile, but when we have, you know, that peak fertility, when our bodies are in a place where it's really safe, really healthy, when our metabolisms are high, when things are balanced and we still have youth. You know, I think our bodies give us signals and signs that we are ready to become mothers, that we should start exploring that. And as we all know here, we're being taught to sort of trade and put aside those signs for things like careers and traveling and, you know, making sort of hedonistic decisions for your own self-fulfillment as opposed to a family fulfillment, because that sort of family dynamic, that emphasis on the bonds between immediate nuclear family are being eroded. And so I would say, I think from as many people I know, as many women as I know that are struggling with some mild and some more severe forms of reproductive disorder and dis-ease, and many of them do not have children. And many of these women who do have these problems, oddly enough, or not, you know, once they end up getting pregnant, they actually, some of these issues, they resolve themselves, which I find really interesting.
Now that is very fascinating.
I think so too, yeah. I think nature has given us, you know, in so many ways, I think all of the tools that we need. I heard there's a certain quote, and I'm not sure where it comes from because I'm showing how not well read I am. I keep seeing it on these various platforms, and it's something to the effect of God gives you the oars, but you have to row. You know, I think in a similar fashion, I think nature gives us all of these tools at our disposal, and we're sort of being taught that we need to rely on these just corrupted institutions to do things that, like you said, we once knew, and we took for granted that we're just passed down because we had those strong bonds in place, because we had larger families, because we were, you know, living with our families for longer, because we weren't moving 800 plus miles away, and because we were healthier, I think, mentally, spiritually, and physically.
I totally agree with what you're saying. Well, let me go through my notes. There were so many interesting things that you all said. Back to Sally, the mother with the, shall we call it the mini nigger. And I saw that video yesterday, and I heard back then that she'd already received $250,000, but you say 600,000. That's awesome. And I was watching that with great fascination, that video, and where that young woman was just talking about that stupid little kid and what it did to her child. But though I should also add in that, you know, there is an example of something that happens to a woman, that a woman turns into a tigress when she's got her child. Her children
are very, very critical. They are her possessions and they belong to her, and she has a strong sense of responsibility to them. And the way that that mother was carrying on, and she was giving the finger and the F word and everything, when I think about that, my own mother was exactly the same. And I'll tell you a story. Let me bore you with a story. In Rhodesia, my mom was at a supermarket. She was we lived on a little farm, and there was a supermarket nearby, and my mom was waiting to be served at the supermarket. And there was another young woman standing at another till, and she had a little boy, and her little boy was starting to get the little boy was starting to become tired, and the little boy was starting to cry and starting to get irritated. But the mother was busy having a long chat, and she'd basically just tell the little boy, you know, be quiet, be quiet. And then at a point, the mother got so angry with her little boy, she was about to hit her little boy. And my mother dashed across there, and my mother stood in front of her, and my mother said to her, if you hit that child, I will hit you. And she said, I've been watching you, and your child is tired, and, you know, you should actually be moving along home, kind of a thing. Anyway, so this young English lady, she was really, really ticked off by this horrid older woman. And she went home, and her husband was quite a few years older than her. I'm not sure if he was 10 or 15 years older than her, but she went and she said to her husband, you know, there was this nasty old woman and she threatened to hit me, etc. And the two of them were actually looking for someone to look after their children when they come out of school, because they're not both home. And so the husband listened to this story, and the husband then went and found out who the horrid old lady was, and he came and he visited my mother, and he said, I want to ask you to look after my children when they come out of school. And so the mother was really pissed off, but that is how we became friends. And I was the only child in the house at that point in time. And so my mother thought it was a great idea to have two other little boys that can also come after school, and then she'll look after all of us, etc. And then the mother or the father would pick them up later. But
that's such a great story.
but yeah, and that became a friendship for life. And the story was repeated many times. So, you know, there are all kinds of things that happen to women as women change, etc. And yeah, you know, you are tapping into nature. And that's important. And I'm really happy to hear about that lady getting that money. I heard about the black who killed the white guy, and that they got, I think, millions of dollars, which they already went and splurged and wasted on all kinds of rubbish, etc. It's so disgusting. I can really lose my mind when I see how our people are killed. They're actually killed, and it's like their lives were worth nothing. I can lose my mind when I think about that. And the other thing is,
like you say, it's a good sign that, that people are getting tired. The other good sign that I saw a couple of months ago was that Luigi guy who blew away the healthcare, who blew away the healthcare CEO. That after he killed the healthcare CEO, people were rushing to volunteer to pay all his legal bills, and and it seems that all the healthcare CEOs got the shock of their lives. They got all kinds of new security, etc., because so many flipping people were clearly so flipping delighted with this guy. And I still want to see what happens in court. It seems he's got a good legal team there, and
I hear that the scenes going into court. He has quite a few female admirers that come every day to cheer for him. He's quite the celebrity. So, yeah, this should be very interesting.
Excellent. Luigi was awesome. When I looked at that Luigi thing, I was saying to myself, America is on the edge of rebellion. America is on the edge of rebellion because they had to have like special news announcements and things that you mustn't praise murderers, and there were all kinds of things that they put out which showed how on edge American society was. I thought that was awesome, but I think that this lady might be yet another wonderful sign as well. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. And I personally am hoping that these things will basically become like fires that burn out of control, where the system can no longer stop these things. So we just got to keep our people supporting each other. And clearly the messages are moving, and the messages are getting across to people, and people are getting sick and tired. I think it's awesome. So the other thing I wanted to mention was this discussion about women's groups, and you know, I agree with the notion that women have a unique role in society. You know, basically, when I look at men and women, maybe my statement might sound a bit wild to you, but you know, women bring people into the world, and men take people out of the world. And that is the way that I see the male-female relationship working. And yes, women have got a very unique and critically important task to do. Unfortunately, thanks to business, thanks to all kinds of business and other weirdo rubbish, that you know, women were made to feel guilty about being mothers. Oh, you're just a mother. You know, you could have had a job and have been earning money and have contributed to society by working for a boss. You know, meanwhile, the real thing is that if women don't have children, the whole freaking nation, and in our case as whites, the entire civilization is about to disappear. So, you know, it's a task that only women can do, and nature is at work. And I liked the concept of, you know, so women are the backbone of a great part of all of society. I will add a little story that my brother mentioned to me a long time ago. A long time ago, I don't know where my brother came across this, but my brother said to me one day, he said, the world is ruled by the mothers of men. The world is ruled by the mothers of men. In other words, mom might not have the vote. Mom might not have $1 billion, but you know what? Mom has got her children, and mom gives her kids values. And those men, those boys who grow up,
They will remember what mom told them, and mom's values will live on in their hearts and minds and will be executed by them as adult men. They will never forget their mother. And you know, a mother there on a sort of a, it may be a bit of a darker kind of a thing, but you know, many is the time when a dying man's last words are that he is calling for his mother. Your mother is the human being that you are the closest to in your life. Even if you have a father, there's nobody that you're as close to as your mother. Your mother is so important to you. So, you know, all this nonsense about jobs and business and money and going and doing business, it's all rubbish. Mothers are doing a critical task. If the mothers stop, which they have largely stopped over recent decades, the entire civilization is going down. And it's all because we don't have mothers. So the other thing about the women's group that was closed and only PMA members are allowed, I agree that, you know, keep with quality. Keep with quality rather than quantity. Look after what you've got and build on what you have. And I think it was Caitlin who said that other races carry their babies for shorter periods of time. Interesting thing. I was looking into this for blacks, because black women carry their babies for a shorter period of time. And I also believe that there are quite a number of differences between a black baby and a white baby when they are born. There are different levels of development, etc. But you are right that, race is so flipping real, and there are differences. And yes, they carry their children for shorter periods of time. These I can't remember the exact time length, but I have seen that it was mentioned in scientific literature. Then the issue about women getting illnesses due to the lack of children. That is very interesting. There's another young woman that I know who lives in my suburb, and she's got children, etc. But one thing that I've noticed about some women is they seemed, and I'm talking in our part of the world, there are some people who seem to have a lot more illnesses, and there's a lot of our illnesses in our part of the world. A lot of our illnesses have to do with the fact that we're not as active as we should be. And I myself am trying to be more and more active. Even as I'm getting older, I'm really working on it, because, you know, it brings us back to the issue of nature. Nature has designed our bodies based on what our ancestors did. And you know, our ancestors, men and women, were way more active physically than we are. And we sit too much. We sit too much at desks and things. And we are much weaker, much softer, and we are also much more ill. And I myself have come across instances where I can show you that people think that they are ill, but it's actually due to inactivity. I'll give you an example that I picked up between talking to my doctor and talking to the pharmacists was constipation. Constipation, I will tell you, there's a lot of people over here where I live who've got constipation. I will tell you that constipation is because of lack of movement. Lack of physical movement. People are not getting up and actually working. People are living lives that are too sedentary, and it brings all kinds of problems with it. So I can imagine that there are lots and lots and lots of illnesses and little things that are coming at people, not only because we aren't living full active lives, but I can understand
that it could impact women, because nature has designed you to have children. You are ready at a certain age, and if you dawdle along, then you know this is how nature has functioned for tens of thousands of years, and so all kinds of things can be happening. And you know, the same is true for men. I was looking at things like prostate cancer. Prostate cancer also has got possible things that are causing that. You know, all of these things come back to you've got a body, and your body, which is the result of tens of thousands of years of evolution, and our ancestors have been busy and working hard until only the last 100 years. And now we are behaving differently. That's why we're getting sick. We're behaving differently. We're also eating all kinds of rubbish. There's all kinds of really bad rubbish that gets put into processed foods. That's what's making you sick. So, you know, motherhood and also being a wife. In one of my videos, I mentioned that these things are really professions, that we should regard motherhood and being a wife. Those are things that should be seen as a proper profession. And it's something where people need to focus on exchanging skills, etc. And instead of this whole business of, oh, you only have value if you've worked for a job, if you've worked in a job, those jobs have destroyed all of our lives, actually. So, yeah. Oh, yes. One final thing I'd like to add about nature is that where whites especially come out different is there's a thing called sexual dimorphism. I don't know if you've heard of sexual dimorphism. It is the physical difference between the male and the female. And in sexual dimorphism, you will notice, for blacks especially, but also other races to lesser degrees, but you'll see it a lot in blacks too, is that the males and the females are physically much more similar than when you look at whites. With whites, the difference between male and female is the most accentuated of all the races. And sexual dimorphism says to me that in nature, our race, the way that our race specialized into male and female, was much more advanced than other races, and that we firmly split male and female roles to such a degree that our bodies started changing over tens of thousands of years. And that's why our race, the men and the women, are even more different. So for us, things like maybe feminism, which might not be a disaster for worthless Jews and others, those kinds of things are a huge disaster for us, because it takes us completely away from where women used to be in our society. Our women are more specialized at handling families, etc., than other races. In Africa, for example, I'll give you an example of the difference between males and females. In Western society, The man in the past, in ancient times, the man would have to go and till the fields, okay? In Africa, the black males don't do the hard work. The black males prior to colonialism, the black males would sit and drink beer, and they'd have their spears, and they might go and hunt a bit now and then. But when it came to doing the physical work, the women did all the physical work. The women did all the physical work, including planting vegetables, etc., such as it is. But the women do all of the other physical work, whereas in Western society, men do certain kinds of hard work, and women will do, you know, the housekeeping and the children and the family type stuff. So, you know, all we are different, we are specialized, and we should be following nature. And I do agree with the viewpoint that nature results in that you need to rather work with nature rather than against nature. And I see that in so many things, that we should be sticking with nature. Let nature drive lots of things. And you know, if I just want to add, one final point. I was reading the history of the Vikings a couple of years ago, and I was amazed when I was reading, here are these whites living way up in Scandinavia, very cold, very nasty climate, and they are overpopulated. They've got so many children. They are overpopulated. They can form new villages. They can expand. They haven't got a shortage of people. They were able to feed themselves. They had more than enough food, and they had more than enough children. You'll never find a time where we were short of children in the past. That is all just modern hogwash. So let me leave it to Sally again. Maybe if there are other things that you guys want to raise. I'd like to have asked a bit more about the return to the land and other things, but I'll leave it up to you to fire away as you see fit.
Yeah, those are all such fascinating things, Jan. It just reminded me of an experience that I had. I was a part of a group for, gosh, it was probably over a year. I was attending these calls. They were weekly calls, I think. And it was for women who were interested in becoming midwives and doing sort of a direct entry type of midwifery. There's so many different ways to get into it. There's nurse midwives and more formalized things like what we were talking about before. But then there's still, you know, the possibility, especially in certain places, I'm sure that there's all different kinds of, regulations in different states. But, so anyway, it was, just sort of a mentorship training program. And it was pretty informal, but it was kind of a discussion group, but we did have assignments, and it was wonderful. I learned a lot. And so there were women of all different stages in their sort of midwife journey. It was run by a lady who had decades of birthing babies. And so then she had a few like direct trainees, and then there was just more people who were there out of curiosity, sort of like me. But anyway, one of the ladies that was in there happened to be Black, and she was actually from some African country. And so she would help out and share different things about what she was doing and in her, you know, training and practice. And as time went on, she became more and more independent. But anyway, at a certain point she was in America, but she went back to Africa, and she was there in Africa. And so she would talk about the births that she was attending. And, she was constantly saying how these babies would be dying. They would have, pretty much every time she came on to talk about a birth, some amount of time she had spent in the local hospital, she would just say, oh yeah, well, you know, we had a mother come and her baby had died at home, or, you know, this baby was stillborn, or this one was dying. And it was just like, shocking. But to hear this statistic about how, you know, they carry their babies for shorter times, you know, you kind of wonder, like, well, is it because that they are, you know, just kind of have these Are the pregnancies not as strong? So they just drop these babies and you go, okay, well, that one died. Let's move on to the next one or whatever. Just kind of a bizarre thing. But it triggered that in my mind because I just remember thinking like, well, I know these people are kind of backward, but like, you know, there's people, women have been having babies in caves and, you know, the backs of covered wagons and all kinds of somewhat disadvantageous situations. But they, you know, you don't hear about that with whites quite like that. It was just constant, you know, babies dying, mothers dying. And yeah, so it's, I think that with the sexual dimorphism thing, you know, perhaps we, to even just seeing a white baby, they have this, you know, this look in their eyes of, they're just very, they are much more, they just seem to have a more alertness and inquisitiveness, and they're quieter and they seem to be more observant than brown babies, you know? So, yeah, it's just a really fascinating, just another thing, another point of departure between, you know, our race and the others. It really is like actual observable differences in the way that our babies are made and born. It's just really quite fascinating. And you know, I before I hand it over to the Return to the Land ladies, I just wanted to talk about a project that I've been working on. And at around the time when the doxing situation happened, I was also in the process of starting a nonprofit in order to establish our homestead here as a maternity residence, which is like an official designation in the state of a place where mothers that need a place to go during a place to live during their pregnancy and for some time afterward, after the baby's born, that we would be able to establish a program like that here. And, yeah, so they can come and live here for free, and, you know, we could help them, find services and just support them. And, so the way that I was, designing our specific program was to, you know, provide certain enrichment programs and things that were rather exclusively European centered and kind of, yes, what is the term, dog whistling to to whites. Given that it is a nonprofit, it's a public 501c3 organization, there's, you know, you can't openly discriminate. But, you know, the program that I have been developing is to try to attract, you know, women, white women that may need some extra support, that, you know, when there's situations you see, like, with, that fellow Sam Melia, or, you know, he's just one of so many that have been wrongfully or outrageously convicted of these silly things. And then they're sent to jail and, you know, they're in the prime of their lives and they've got wives that have babies and, are pregnant. And, you know, what becomes of that family? And especially if a woman's pregnant and she really just ought not to be working, on anything except growing a baby, I feel. So, you know, what happens for our people? We need to be thinking about establishing these, you know, like Nikki was saying, that there's all these corrupt institutions that we've sort of been forced to, that's all that's available. And so we need to kind of look at establishing our own kind of institutions or organizations or networks for these unfortunate situations that do happen. You know, I was inspired to do this because someone that I knew in the movement was actually experiencing a situation where her and her husband had just separated because the husband was really going through a lot of serious mental health issues. And so they were married for many years, but she finally decided that she needed to separate herself. And of course, right at that time, she also happened to find out that she was pregnant. So she was, there was some tense moments there while she tried to figure out what was she going to do. And luckily she did have family support, but that was kind of the impetus for me to look into, well, you know, what is available? Heaven forbid she would have to go to the state. And again, like Nikki was mentioning, you know, a lot of times that just opens you up to a lot of crazy stuff with CPS, child, protective services, as they call it. They'll just look for any way to kind of insinuate the state into the lives of white people and keep them from handling their own business. Like we just want to be left alone. So anyway, that's, I'll give the information of that to you, Jan, if you want to post that with this video. It's called Shotskin Services is the name of it. I did have to kind of put things on hold for a while during all of the targeting of, me and my family, because they were trying to use the website contacts and things to harass and all of that. And I didn't want to drag the organization or any of the other, because it is a 501c3, there's a board, and I didn't want any of them to get have any issues as a result. But we're starting to gear that back up again. And another kind of inspiration for that organization was the Lebensborn in the Third Reich, right? Himmler created these Lebensborn homes for wives and women who were connected with men who were in the SS or also the police, because that was like a subset of the Schutzstaffel, they were these homes where they could go and get pretty much top of the line maternity care. And it was, they were really just the pinnacle of, you know, maternity care at the time. And they were focused on bonding. There was a huge emphasis on, you know, the mother being with the baby and just being availed of just a time to focus on being a mother after the baby was first born, and on breastfeeding and leading up to the birth of the baby. They were, you know, given these wonderful, you know, conditions to just sort of focus on health for themselves and the baby that was growing in them. And so, of course, there's been a lot of scandalous silliness written about these homes that, oh, they were, you know, eugenics breeding programs and all of that kind of thing, which has, of course, been like widely debunked, even by, you know, people that aren't exactly in the movement. They'll say, yeah, no, that's not really what it was. But it, it's just a really fascinating thing. Like Himmler, he would be, when the babies would be born, he was actually, it kind of became the default godfather of all of the children. So if heaven forbid anything happened to the mother or, you know, the father, that he was like their official documented godfather. So it was ultimately on him to provide for these children if that ever became necessary. And the situation with some of those mothers was, you know, some of them were out of wedlock situations, but others were just, you know, the fathers were away doing their military duties or something, and so they just needed a place to go and a safe place to be pregnant and have their babies. And so that's a whole different topic, but we need to look out for our mothers, and we need to and situations that maybe are sometimes a little bit sticky, like, yeah, maybe there is a baby that was outside of a marriage that is now, you know, a reality, and how are we going to handle that? Or, you know, the things start out with the best of intentions, but, you know, the mother and father split up. Well, the mother still needs to be taken care of. The baby still needs to be nurtured and given the best possible chance So, you know, we do, as part of establishing our own communities and really reestablishing the a white world that we need to make sure that we're providing for the vulnerable and confronting maybe some of the situations that, of course, ideally you want a mother and father together and the baby getting the care that they need. But sometimes, you know, things don't work out that way. So that's why I have been trying to work on establishing that here and, you know, being a resource for mothers in need. So anyway, I will step back and let the other ladies speak, but I just wanted to thank you, Jan, for having us, and Nikki and Caitlin, I appreciate you guys so much coming on and sharing with us about what you all are working on and just your lovely insights. It's just really nice to have these conversations. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys for, you know, putting this together and inviting us. I appreciated Jan's sentiment of the quality over quantity of people, you know, joining the group. And right, you don't want to get too paranoid, but you also want to be aware that there are bad actors out there that are trying to take what we're doing and, you know, veer it off, take the reins or whatever into wherever they want to do. So, yeah, one of our board members, Peter Seary, a while ago, he made a YouTube video, kind of talking about how feds act, how they might come in and try to, what's the word? They might try to like manipulate people. Yeah, disrupt or manipulate people. And how actually, if you look at, you know, mentally unstable people, they will act very similarly. So I just think it's a good point to always, like, you want to be open with everyone, because we don't have anything to hide. We're just really trying to make a place. Yeah, we're trying to exist, make a place for our people and be safe. You know, you look out into the world and all of the craziness, it seems so obvious that this is the safest, just, you know, best way for us to move forward is by banding together, putting our resources together. But yeah, definitely always good to kind of in the back of your mind, be on the lookout for, you know, are these persons' actions helping the movement or could this be a red flag? Did you miss anything?
Sure. This is, it's related. I hope it's not too much of a tangent, but Sally had mentioned, you know, just in terms of the own, the 501c3 that she had, she's, you know, working on, in terms of trying to offer support to women that might not be able to seek it elsewhere. It just made me think of the fact that, you know, you would think that your family, your blood, your immediate family are going to be the people that are going to have your back. But for many of us, you know, our families are a product of the modern world. Mm-hmm. And our families did, in a sense, absorb the same brainwashing that we did, but maybe in some ways in stronger degrees. And maybe they don't have the, I don't know what the word would be. They don't have the kind of luminaries that are kind of, I think, showing up in later generations that are sort of doing the historical, you know, deep diving into seeing how these patterns are manifesting and that this, what we've been taught isn't true, and, you know, exposing these lies. And so, I think it's especially important for people to bear in mind that when it comes to, when it comes to race, when it comes to the Jewish question, the Jewish problem, there's many people whose families will not support them once they realize that this is the path that they're taking. Once they start talking about these problems, you know, my own family, I did not personally talk to them about this, but they found my Twitter and it was public, and they were very they expressed their supreme disappointment in me, and still to this day, my my father is having a very hard time talking to me. And it's, you know, it's like, it's an odd place to be, because I believe wholeheartedly in what I'm doing, and I feel safe here, and I've met these people. I'm now living with them. You know, we're not maybe in different circumstances. Maybe we wouldn't all be best friends. Maybe we wouldn't have met, but I feel that these are really quality people, and I'm proud to call them my neighbors and my friends. And it's such a trip, you know, for my family to say, we're so worried about you, and we're so disappointed, because it's like, oh, I wish you guys just knew, like, I wish you would just look into this a little bit more deeply, and then maybe you would feel the exact opposite way.
Yeah, it is a shame. I mean, I wasn't there, you know, 60 years ago, but I do assume it would be easier for those people to look around and say, oh, things aren't that bad, and become complacent. So I just hope that in the future, it doesn't take like a civil war for people to wake up and actually want to come here and do something. I got lucky with my parents. My parents are actually going to be relocating halfway across the country to come live closer, and they know about the community. The JQ is definitely what I would need to work on with them, but yeah, I'm lucky they're basically on the same page as me.
If I may ask, the organization that you're part of, are there other groups and things that you people have been in touch with? Are there other networks?
Yes, there definitely are. I'm not 100% privy to all of that. I don't think it's like a secret, but that would probably be Airvol. Yeah, I'm not sure. There are definitely groups going on. I know there are some groups that don't want to be as public because they don't want to, you know, deal with all this backlash and having to go through all the hoops and stuff. So,
yeah, I've heard of some groups that are, you know, pro-white and whites only, but they're not creating, you know, they're not necessarily doing anything. They're not creating a PMA or an LLC or anything like that. They're just sort of keeping it hush hush, so to speak, and only sharing it with people that, you know, that they want in the fold, as a way to protect themselves without maybe coming under legal attack.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely a lot of networking in RPMA. I guess my answer would be join RPMA and then you can start talking to others.
No, it's I'm just asking out of curiosity, and it's good that you mentioned that there are other groups that are pro-white, but they're operating on a hush-hush basis. Unfortunately, that is a large part of how we have to function. We've got such nasty enemies, and you folks in America, you know, they come out at you and they hit you with this doxing nonsense, and they destroy people's lives, and they try to harm you. So I thought I'd just ask. And if there are any other things you want to mention before I wind up.
Covered a good range of topics. Yeah, we could go on for 8 hours if we wanted, but
okay. Then we'll wind up. Let me just go through my notes quickly. Regarding what Sally was saying about black babies dying and among the blacks there's a lot more death. Yes. Sally, these people are different, okay? And they're also stupid. And the things that they get up to, and they will die in situations where if whites were in exactly the same situation, whites will think quicker, make better moves, etc., and whites won't get into that kind of situation. We think much more ahead, etc. And I'll give you a simple example. The blacks here in South Africa, there are certain tribes of blacks who also circumcise. Now, circumcision is not something that I'm keen on, and I have heard men say that it's actually a bad thing. And I suspect that anything where you're fiddling and going against nature, that it's not a good thing. But anyway, there are of course whites and Jews who do circumcision as part of their stuff, and it's not common. It does happen, but it's not common that the children will die, though some do die. And I actually was sent an article the other day about a little baby in New York, little white, and it looks like it's a genuine white child. It doesn't look like it's a Jew. It doesn't look like a Jewish family. It looks like it's genuine whites who genuinely believed in circumcision, and they had their little boy circumcised, and things went wrong. And there are a whole bunch of photos of this poor little baby. This little child has almost died as a result of this stupid nonsense. So now move forward to Black Africa. Here in South Africa, we've got tribes who've got initiation procedures for circumcision. So when the boys become men, when they're teenagers, then they go and they go through their ceremonies that were done for millions of years, so they say, and they do circumcision as part of that. Well, you'd be amazed how many of them drop dead, okay? They end up dying from their own circumcision. Then it turns out that the instruments were dirty, this and that, all kinds of things come up. You'd be amazed how many of them die from their own self-inflicted circumcision stuff. These people are completely different, and you need not worry about them. And things that our ancestors were doing quite successfully 1,000 years ago and even 5,000 years ago, these people drop dead from, okay? So, you know, that's just par for the course. I agree with you. Go for it.
It's just a thing that occurred to me, silly, but it's like kind of reminds me of like rabbits. We keep rabbits here, and like this, you know, sometimes they'll just drop dead and you don't know why. And it's like, well, they almost have this like mental stress factor where it's like, that wasn't really going to kill you, rabbit, but you don't know that because you're just not very smart. So you just, I guess, you know, it was just too much and your heart exploded and that was it. And you almost feel like that's how these people are. They're just, it's like they're too dumb to live. You know, but anyway, yeah, that was just my little analogy.
Well, I got to tell you, they inflict lots and lots of pain and suffering on themselves. It's, you won't believe it. Lots of things that we would say, why the heck did you do this? Or, you know, how the hell did you end up in this situation? Let me tell you, we in Africa, we've seen all kinds of rubbish. So, yeah, I agree that creating our own organizations and networks is an absolute must. And it must be run by our people, and we must protect it. It's the only way. It's the only way. It is the most important way. And that's also why it will be targeted by our enemies. And then you mentioned the state sticking its nose into the issues like the thing you were trying to create. I should add to that, the other area is also as the children get older and they need to go to school, the schools are going to become critically important, you know, because those are the brainwashing centers for your children. You've brought them into the world and somebody else is about to totally bugger up their minds and destroy their lives. So schooling is going to be an important thing. Interesting that you mentioned about the Lebensborn in the Third Reich, and that there are lots of rotten things written about it. And you know what? Even if they were practicing eugenics, so what? Whatever they were doing, it's fine. You know, but of course, jury and all the others will not want you to even think in those terms. If you start thinking SS, they will not want you to think like that at all. And by the way, are you aware? Well, I don't know if any of you know. Do any of you know the group from the 1970s, ABBA? ABBA, the group from Sweden? Or
yes, we know.
I'm just checking to see whether I'm too old. Well, do you know that one of the women of ABBA is a Lebensborn?
I did know that just because I've been, you know, I'm a weirdo and researched that, but I didn't know before I had really dove into this. Really fascinating. You know, the Nordic babies were very valuable. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Excellent. Excellent. Well. So I just want to mention this other thing about, so everything that they did, Lebensborn and all the things that the Germans did, you know, research as much as you want, because I must tell you, the Germans did everything and prepared the way with everything you can imagine. They did so much thinking in so many areas. There is so much that they did so well, even though it's almost 100 years later. But what I do want to mention that you brought up was the issue of babies born out of wedlock. A guy that I know here in South Africa, a guy called Koen Vermaak. Koen Vermaak runs a small political party called the Boer State Party. And Koen is also an atheist. And Koen and I have spoken many times on many topics, and I support him. And Koen raised the issue about children, and he said to me that he wrote a bunch of books about South Africa and what was going wrong here. And he wrote some books that delve into children, the fact that we don't have children, and also sex related issues. And in his books, his big issue was that we in South Africa, we had condoms, we had contraceptives, and we slowed down our own birth rate. And he attributes it, he blames the church for it. And then Koen says to me that in his reading and studying of European history, that he has never been able to find an instance in ancient times, in pre-Christian times, he's never found an instance where a woman gave birth to a child out of wedlock, and where the woman was then shunned or chased out or maligned in some way. He said that from what he can see in pre-Christian times, nobody cared. If a child was born, the child is accepted, regardless of whether it was out of wedlock or how the baby came into this world. So I must tell you that, and the Germans had exactly the same attitude. I think the Germans also allowed pregnant women who were single, they helped them so that they could have a child, so that the child could be born. And I think that I think Hitler also gave them a home, etc., just like a normal family. If it was just the woman alone with her child, I think she got all the stuff that she needed. They didn't discriminate on this thing. And I must tell you, Koen and I, we both agree. We totally agree. Women, if a woman is pregnant, it may, regardless of the circumstances,
let her have her child and support her. It's no crime. It's not a crime to have a child. The whole issue of the father and all the other stuff, those are other things. But don't make it a big issue. That child is valuable. That child is another life that is part of our tribe. And then...
Oh, sorry, Jan. Go ahead.
Go for it.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I totally agree with what, you and Kuhn have come to believe as well, that, you know, the name of the organization that I am involved in growing here is, it's called Schatzkind, and it's a German word that means treasure. Schatz means treasure, and Kind obviously means child. So it means treasure child, or, you know, that just to, you probably have heard, like, Schatzi, you're my treasure, you're my sweetheart. And that's how I think we should look at our children. They're our treasure. They're the most important thing that we have. And that's how, you know, regardless, like you say, of how it came about that this, you know, every child needs to be treasured like that. So, yeah, totally agree. Anyway, go ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every child is an asset. Every child is part of the group. End of story. And I think that they even took care of children if the mother and father died or something like that. That's the way we should view it. We should view all children as assets of the race, period. And whatever happens, that child must be looked after. There must be some way to help that child. And you know, here in South Africa, I know a lady. There was a lady friend of mine. And she would sometimes adopt other people's children. Like, there were, I can't remember how many other children she raised other than her own. I'm not sure if it was like at least two other children, but she had that instinct, that desire that she would help a child. And if that child didn't have parents, she would take it on and she'd raise it and look after it herself, you know, with no help. And she wasn't a wealthy woman either, but she had a wonderful heart. And you know, these kinds of things are really there are so many things that we don't pay money for, but it is valuable. It is valuable in an enormous way. There are lots of things in white society where we do things and we just do things and we don't charge for it. We don't turn everything into a business transaction. And there are many things that people do that are wonderful, that are fantastic. And just going back to the other ladies, the one about the bad actors out there, I'm just mentioning that I'm just trying to make you aware that it's not just individual bad actors, but that you've got groups out there with malicious agendas, and they don't want to see whites succeed as a group. And any chance that they get to attack people in the white right, to destroy anything that whites are busy building, they will attempt to do that. So all I'm saying is there are deliberate, malicious, hideous bastards out there, and they are watching to see how they can screw everything up. And those of us who run websites, etc., we ourselves have been under attack. So that's the only way that I'm trying to describe it. About the lady who was talking, I can't remember whether it was Caitlin or Nikki, about the family not being supportive and the family being divided. That is an unfortunate thing. It's an unfortunate thing, and it's a common thing. I have it in my own family. I've got people that I have not been able to teach my parts of my own family about the JQ. No matter what I throw at them, they toss it out. They're not interested. So it's a part of the way we are, and it may also be part of the way that we evolved, that you will find that even if you've got people who are born into the same family, that you'll find within the same family, among the same children, that you'll find very different viewpoints. And it may just be a natural part of evolution and so forth, that even when we are of the same blood, we are not always of the same mind. We see different parts of different problems differently. And it may just be a long-term survival strategy that is part of us. And so it's very sad, actually. It's very sad that you've got that particular kind of a problem. But it may be sad, but it's not unexpected. It happens a lot. It happens to most everybody in the white right. I know other people in the white right who've been very prominent, and I know their personal life stories, and I can tell you some nasty things that went on with them behind the scenes based on their own families. It was a big struggle for them too. I'll tell you another little quick, I'll try and make it quick story. My very first and most loyal supporter that I ever had on the internet in the early 2000s was an old lady in America, in Oregon. Her name was Joanne Wilcox. Joanne Wilcox was the most awesome person that I ever had as a supporter. And this old lady, in many ways, I said to her, "Joanne, you're like my second mother." Joanne was awesome. And I knew Joanne for about 12 years. She and her husband came and visited in South Africa, and then her husband passed away, and I visited in America, and I went and stayed with her at one time. So we'd met personally, we knew each other well, we'd dealt with each other for like 12 years, and then Joanne passed away. And I had quite a number of supporters in America who, when they heard that she'd passed away, they wanted to attend her funeral. So we got in touch with her daughter, and to our horror, the daughter wanted absolutely nothing to do with any of us. They didn't even want anyone to even attend the mother's funeral. And I've seen that kind of thing more recently with another young guy who passed away. So, you know, it's unfortunate that these things are there, and it's just part of the nasty struggle. And it says a lot about you that you are committed and you're doing what you're doing, and you know what you are doing, you know why you're doing it, you know how important it is, but unfortunately, your family isn't seeing it the same way. But I'm glad that the other lady's family is supportive. So anyway, thank you very much for being on this show today and for chatting and for sharing your thoughts. It was very, very interesting, and I wish you all well, and I'll keep in touch, and I'll work out something about how people can contact you guys afterwards. And maybe there are other things that we can share and talk about later. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Jan. It was really fun.
And thank you both for the kind words. Jan, I appreciated so many of your stories. You have a wonderful cadence, and Sally, I really like your voice, and so many good points. And I think it's so important that we have these conversations more publicly and in a way like I'm not the first to say it, and even I could be doing more, but I think it is important that in a sense we begin to de-anonymize ourselves to bring more of these conversations into the forefront of, you know, just to put it on display, to in a way almost kind of reinforce and solidify the positions of those of our folk who do come under attack.
You know, I find it horrific that the United States of America, which is a white country and which is dominated by whites, and whites have always been the majority, I find it horrific to think that white Americans are not allowed to just think what they want to think or do what they want to do. It's not like you people are trying to set someone on fire. It's not like you're trying to kill somebody. All you're just trying to do is just think your own thoughts and do your own things, all of which are so innocent. They are so normal. And yet the vicious way in which Jewry and liberalism attacks you people, and I find doxing, to me, doxing is like Jewish terrorism, man. It's like, I can't believe that just because you have a certain viewpoint, that they try and destroy your job, they get people thrown out of they try and destroy a person's life. I've seen it happen to so many people that I know. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how far Jews and liberals have gone in your country. That most every American I know knows how to operate under a pseudonym. You know, whether it's on the phones or whatever. Do you know, I've got supporters. I've got some supporters that I know so well, and they still hide things from me. They are so worried about their jobs and their things because they are so paranoid, but paranoid in a way that is totally understandable when I see the things that happen to you people. It's out of this world that literally all of white America has to run around pretending something that Jewry doesn't like. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely.
It is kind of shocking, but you know, I will just say this before we close that, you know, when I was doxxed, they flew a drone over over the house and filmed things that we were doing on our private property, and just. It was bizarre. It was totally bizarre. And they put it on the internet with our faces, our pictures, our address. And you know, my children are here. Everything is here. This is, you know, my private home. And that was all over the internet. But the one thing that I was actually just laughing when I was made aware of it. And I looked at the website that had the information on it. And I was just kind of like, wow, you know, they picked a really good photo of me, and they put my artwork on there, and like it was actually a really kind of a nice like a CV, you know, sort of like a little bit of a just a portfolio of things, and I thought to myself, you know, that's all they could find. They could just go on the internet and find things. Wholesome things, like they were talking about the Shotskin organization, and can you believe that she's trying to start an organization to support and brainwash mothers in their most vulnerable time, you know, but that was like the worst they could find. And like you said, we're just trying to do things that, and not only innocent things, but the things that created this country to begin with, people getting together and establishing communities and totally normal, wholesome, wonderful things. And so as long as we keep doing that, you know, unfortunately, yeah, we do have to take some evasive action now and then, but I think we're growing together and we're getting stronger. And yeah, we just keep doing our white things because they are the very best things. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to see what I call the herd instinct kicking in, and more people coming on board. And recently I got onto Twitter for the first time in years, and I was amazed by the stuff that was being put out there. I can see people are pushing things at a hectic pace, and everywhere I go on social media, I can see people are giving it their everything. So we must just try to protect certain people and certain groups. But when people are feeling stronger and people are ready to move to the next level, then move to the next level. Because ultimately, I agree with you,
We have to be allowed to say what we want to say. If we are not committing a crime, if we're just thinking certain thoughts, there's no reason why we can't say what we want to say. And take, for example, communism, Jewish Bolshevism, communism. Communism used to openly state that the only way to move forward is to overthrow the state. You have to go and kill people and overthrow the state. That's the only way that communism can move forward. And yet the Communist Manifesto, all communist stuff, you could pick it up at any library, you could do anything with it, and there'd be no hassle. Now you've got Hitler's Mein Kampf, and all of a sudden that's an issue. Meanwhile, Hitler never even promoted the kinds of hideous violence that communism did. Yet communism was okay everywhere. The only thing that's not allowed is national socialism and any form of racialism. So ridiculous. Anyway, thank you so much. It was really nice talking to all of you. So that was the show. Now for the final points, which I forgot to actually say during the show. Here in South Africa, there are many things that can be depressing, but I don't let them bother me because I can see that whites are capable of solving certain problems. However, there is one thing in South Africa that I do find depressing, like really depressing. I live in a suburb here in Johannesburg, and this suburb that I live in is part of a number of suburbs that have always been white, and there are still lots of whites who live here, and it's not been so much blacks who've moved into the area as Indians, but at least the Indians are not lawless like the blacks, and they are much higher IQ than the blacks. But anyhow, these suburbs were built decades ago, and my house, for example, is almost as old as I am. So these suburbs were built about 60 years ago, and they were built for whites, and only whites lived in this suburb and several others that are all adjacent to each other. And when they built these suburbs, they built schools for the children. They built primary schools and high schools, etc. And when I drive around, there are obviously lots of blacks all over the show, at the shops and on the roads and everything. But when I drive through the suburbs, then there are times when I end up having to drive past a school. And then when it is break time or when it is time to go home and you drive past that school, those schools were built for white children because the suburbs were for whites only. But when you go past those schools these days and the kids are outside, all you see are just black children. You don't see even a single white child there, not even one. And for me, that is the most depressing thing that I ever see in South Africa, are the schools in what used to be the former white suburbs. And I would say that at least half of the people who still live in the suburbs, between a third to a half of the people who live in these suburbs, are whites. They're just older whites. But the schools are just black. You don't even see one white child there. And there are quite a few schools that I drive past. There is only one exception, and that is in another suburb a bit further away, where when you drive past that high school, all you see are 95% white children. That's the only exception. So most of the schools are just totally black, but there's one exception, and that school is about 95% white kids. And the secret there is that is an Afrikaans school. So it's basically a Boer school, whereas these other schools close to where I live are English schools. And the blacks hate Afrikaans. They hate it because Afrikaans is the language of apartheid. That was when the Afrikaners ruled them. So they like English, but they hate Afrikaans. So the idea of sending their kids to an Afrikaans school to do all their lessons in Afrikaans, the blacks hate it. And that allows the Afrikaners to quietly be able to keep their schools white without discriminating. It's just here and there the odd black who will send their child to an Afrikaans school. It's rare. So when you drive past the Afrikaans schools, you see all white children. They're nice, healthy boys and girls, looking good, fit, and they're rocking. And that is the only way that we have any white schools left, is because the blacks hate Afrikaans. And that is one of the secrets of how the Afrikaners managed to hang in there here in South Africa. They use their language as a weapon, and it works like a bomb. But it means that most of these other schools in these suburbs are black. And for me, that is the most depressing thing that I see in South Africa. The only bright light is Afrikaans. And so if you look at that picture on the screen, that'll give you an idea of what one of the schools looks like near where I live. This is just a standard nice photo that they took. I don't have actual photos of what I see, but I can tell you that when I drive past those schools, because our system here works on the British system, so all the schools, you have to wear a school uniform. And those school uniforms were designed for those schools in the time of white rule. And when you see all the kids walking around, you actually see them in school uniforms coming out of schools that were built for white kids. And for me, it's so depressing. And you'll find that there are hundreds of kids coming out of those schools. And I tell you that for me is the most depressing thing that I see in South Africa, because it means that there aren't many white children around, except for the Afrikaners. And I think what also does happen is that some of the English parents will send their children to Afrikaans schools just to try and get them to a white school. So there's a little bit of good stuff there, but on the whole, it's not nice. To me, it's very depressing. I should add that in the last 5 to 10 years, that when I go shopping or I go to the mall, I see a lot more white women with children. I see a lot more young white women with children. And I must say, it is good to see that the young children look very healthy and they look very well cared for. They look really good. And then, of course, like I say, at that Afrikaans school, which is a high school, there you see the white boys and girls who are in their teens, and they're looking nice and fit and healthy. But there are definitely more children around than there used to be 10 and more years ago. And when I walk past the women who have children and I hear them speak, 9 times out of 10, they are speaking Afrikaans. The Afrikaners are definitely having more children than the English. I regard the Afrikaners as being in a much healthier state in South Africa than the English. They have definitely invested more in their families than the English. So let me tell you another little final story, and this comes from Koen Vermaak, who I mentioned at the beginning of this video, where I mentioned that Koen Vermaak has written books in Afrikaans for Afrikaners about all the bad things regarding lack of children, contraception, all that kind of thing. Why the hell did we even have such a thing as contraception, which was brought into South Africa in the 1960s, and even then the whites were outnumbered. The same is true for Rhodesia, etc. All of us did stupid things. Anyhow, Koen Vermaak's wife passed away at the end of last year, and I went to the funeral of his wife. And Koen also wrote a tribute to his wife, whom he misses dearly. And Koen made an interesting statement. Koen said that a woman creates eternal life. Now remember, he's an atheist like myself. But when he looks at it, he sees a woman having children as being a line that's going to continue endlessly. In fact, it's more like the roots of a tree that branch out, and those roots are going to get longer and longer. So he referred to a woman as a person who creates eternal life. It's not just your immediate children, it's that your immediate children are going to have children of their own, and so it goes on. That what you are doing is extremely important, actually. But I have a final little piece of fun I want to share with you. During the show, Sally mentioned the American lady, Shiloh, who was so angry at the little nigger and how she was just losing her shit. And it was because she said that the little black had stolen or messed with something relating to her child. So the tigress in her came out and she was just letting loose, okay? And anyway, she has received a lot of money and a lot of support from people. And it's wonderful. But I saw this today, which really made me laugh. And it is this. If you look on the screen in front of you, it's this message that an American lady posted. And she says, "Very lovely words of support on Shiloh's fundraiser." And it says, "Anonymous giver, $5. And then it says, "Hi, I am 8 years old, and this is all of my allowance. When I grow up, I want to be a geneticist so I can create a disease to eradicate niggers and Jews from our planet." And then he writes, "Imagine a world where white people can go to Chuck E. Cheese again." Well, I haven't been to Chuck E. Cheese, but I assume Chuck E. Cheese must absolutely rock, okay? But you know, this kind of thing makes me laugh because it shows you, I've seen this kind of thing with all the kids, that once the kids start understanding things, once they understand things, you'll see that the children aren't going to run off to the other side. They're not going to go and do other things. They will stick with their own kind and they will do their thing that they think will help. And there are many things I noticed in the last 10 years about younger people, younger white people in South Africa, where I saw them becoming National Socialists, I saw them starting to have families. And when I look at their behavior, then it makes me so happy because I can see that they are continuing forward as whites and that they are trying to make a future for themselves, but they are sticking with our line and they're not running off to go and join Jews. They're not running off to go and live in a township among blacks. They are reading up about Hitler. They are studying things. They are developing their minds. They are actually healthy. They are healthy and they are fine. And it just shows yet again something that I've been trying to tell whites for a long time, that if the world was left alone, everyone will become nationalist. Everyone will become racialist. This is even true for the non-whites. The non-whites, I've explained this before, even in Africa, the non-whites in Africa and in South America and in Asia, everybody originally wanted nationalism. And underneath it, without them even realizing it, is also racialism. Nobody actually wants to be a liberal. And it is only whites who've been made totally insane in the Western world into believing that everybody wants liberalism. No, that's not true. And it shows you, like in this case, that if a child just gets a little bit of natural, old-style upbringing, and the child understands a little bit about the enemies of our race, the child's going to be fine. The only thing that parents must do is keep your children away from Jews and liberals and communists. They will destroy your child's mind. They will end up destroying your child's life. But if you retain control of your child's mind and you can guide your child through life and see to it that you can put them in a school or educate them in some way that they don't have a flipping Jew whispering in their ear, then all is going to be well. Everything's going to be good and fine. So for me, when I see something like this, I have a good chuckle. I really enjoyed this. And the little boy has got a plan. He's going to solve the problem in the future. And that's awesome. What he needs to find out about is a guy called Dr. Wouter Basson. In South Africa, the liberals and the Jews screech about Dr. Death. This little kid, little boy, I hope he gets to study Dr. Wouter Basson, because Wouter Basson was trying to do exactly some of this. Another American said to me that there's no ways that a little kid wrote that, because a little kid wouldn't write about Chuck E. Cheese, but he said it's funny anyway. Well, it doesn't matter if it was written by an adult and adults are pretending the children wrote it. That's also fantastic. As long as the adults are cunning, if the adults are cunning and they are busy playing their own games and they are able to say all kinds of things while pretending it comes from a child, that's great. As long as the whites are cunning and whites are playing their own game and whites are in there playing their game quietly, it's fantastic. That's all that matters. And clearly whites are able to get all sorts of messages out. And in my own researches over the years, as I've watched things that people have put together, including videos that are put together by some young whites, I must tell you, I am astounded by some of the stuff that people have slipped in that at first fooled me, and it fooled me big time. And then later I thought about it and I realized, no way, man, this is something that someone's come up with. They are so sneaky and so nasty. So yeah, the bottom line is to not be silent. That's the bottom line. Silence will kill us. As for Sally and Caitlin and Nikki, if you want the details of the organizations that they belong to, it is in the description below the video. If we just stick together, think the thoughts that nature wants us to think, and we just protect the children so that their minds are not rotted by Jewry and Jewry's assorted scum, we'll be good to go. We'll be good to go. All we need are just lots more children. So, to quote Ben Clausen, we just need to make it a whiter, brighter world. Thank you very much for listening today. I hope that you learned something new today. Look after yourselves and take care. We'll be chatting again soon.
Give up, my friend. If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win. Every fight, you'll fight. Every